on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. And now, a conversation about the phenomenon known as curationism. As you might have observed, curating isn't just for art experts in museums anymore. The word curator can speak to the DJ in the club who creates a particular ambiance in a room, the Instagram poster who curates his or her kitchen for the perfect photograph, or the festival director who chooses a weekend's worth of films. We all live in a world of infinite choices, from what music to put on our phone to what details to reveal about ourselves on a dating app. And so, in the common parlance, we are all curators of our lives. David Balzer is a Canadian author who has studied the history of curating in the art world and how the notion of curating has leaked into business and our culture at large. He's written a book that he'll be talking about Sunday night at Red Emma's Bookstore and Cafe in Baltimore. It's called Curationism, How Curating Took Over the Art World and Everything Else. He joins us on the line from Toronto. Good morning. It's good to talk to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And with me in the studio is Marcus Sivan. He's an interdisciplinary artist, a writer, and a curator. He's now the acting director of curatorial practice at MICA. That's the graduate program in curating at the Maryland Institute College of Art. Marcus, good to have you here.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So, David, what's the central thesis of your book and your understanding and interest in this notion of curationism?
Well, the motivation behind writing the book was my noticing that many people in the art world were sort of disturbed, upset, perturbed by this increasingly common use of curator and to curate. And I detected snobbery, so I decided that I would research the history of not just curating, but in particular contemporary curation, in an attempt to make some linkages. And so what ended up happening was a book that shows that through line from the earliest iterations of the contemporary curator to the contemporary time in which, you know, as you were saying, people on Instagram and Twitter are calling themselves curators. But the central thesis is that curating in the contemporary mode is what I call an impartation or performance of value. And that performance is kind of an anxious one. It's a bit of a fretful one. And it's one that, through a number of reasons that are, I think, sort of definitively contemporary, that it logically makes sense that we're all doing it. And not only that, but that in the 1990s, when the curator ascended in the art institution, that there was a degree of anxiety and a need for performance there. Just as sort of at the turn of the millennium with the internet, there was also a degree of anxiety around, say, identity, around shifting economies, and therefore that necessitated curating on a broader sort of pop cultural scale.
Let me make sure I understand. When you talk about the anxiety and fretfulness that accompanies curating, is it because we're afraid of how we're going to look, or is the endeavor itself born out of anxiety and fretfulness? What do you mean exactly?
I think it's more the latter. What we're talking about when we're talking about curators is their relationship with the world of objects. I suppose in general, in the capitalist West, the notion of what makes an object valuable fluctuates. And in a way, we only know how valuable an object is based on how that value is performed. So curating is part of that performance of value. Now, it gets trickier when we enter into the art world, especially into the avant-garde in the early 20th century, because, of course, at that point, works are being created that don't display the traditional sort of markers of value, such as, say, for instance, craft, labor, time-intensive labor. As the 20th century avant-garde kind of moves ahead and it sort of explodes in activity, those sorts of activities, or the artworks that are produced by those activities, become more and more nebulous, more and more hard to define. And so there needs to be, there's an anxiousness, there's a nervousness around, is this valuable? And if it is, that value needs to be performed. Now, similarly, we're existing in this kind of, our identities are kind of thrust into this virtual world. I contend that the internet has sort of created these conditions of personhood in which we're no longer kind of sure as to what distinguishes us from the other person. We're kind of fit into these templates by social media. And the more we like, the more we're kind of protesting our own individualities. But there's an anxiousness around that, that maybe we're all sort of doing the same protestations.
David Balzer is associate editor at Canadian Art Magazine, the author of Curationism, How Curating Took Over the Art World and Everything Else. He joins us on the line from Toronto. And here in the studio, Marcus Sivin is here, the acting director of curatorial practice at MICA, the Maryland Institute College of Art. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning, and I'm Tom Hall. So Marcus Sivin, when you hear David talk about these anxieties and moments of fretfulness, is this a conversation that you and your students are having in the course of the program there?
Yeah, absolutely. We've road tested some of David's books so far in our courses at MICA. I think that David does a good job of showing where the idea of a curator emerged in curatorial practice in museums and galleries, and then, you know, where it's sort of become today. And I think he has some fun doing it in terms of, I wrote this down because I thought it was a good example. David says sometimes you have to climb a mountain to properly curate a sock. And he's talking about a musician. Is that right, David, who has curated a collection of socks? So, I mean, we are in a specific moment now.
Talking of road testing, right. Yeah,
yeah, which the students are really aware of. And it's important to them.
And so, David Balzer, is the fact that this word is used in so many areas outside of the art world, does that in any way attenuate its significance or its importance in the art world? In other words, if you're a curator in a museum, that's one thing. If you're a curator of socks, that's another thing. And does one affect the perception of the other?
I'm a critic, so I don't have to defend the profession of curating. I think it's important not to be too sanctimonious about what a curator is and what a proper curator is and what a sort of a perverted version of a curator is, because the contemporary curator has always had a very intimate and interesting relationship with amateurism. Ever since the 17th century and the cabinets of curiosity, which I use as sort of the ground zero of contemporary curating. And it's important to make a distinction here between the contemporary curator and the sort of old school art historical curator who goes through an art history program, does a PhD, you know, takes a certificate in museum management, and then, say, works with illuminated medieval manuscripts. I'm talking about the contemporary curator. And so this notion of the professionalized contemporary curator is such a new phenomenon. It's barely 20 years old, and it's really the 1990s that showed us that emergence or that institutionalization of the contemporary curator for a number of reasons, which again I think are due to a degree of financial and cultural anxieties. And all those curators, and indeed the curators that we know now to be famous, such as Hans-Ulrich Obrist, who recently had a profile in the New Yorker magazine, all of these people don't have formal training. So I think it's important to wonder, rather than turn one's nose up at this sort of confluence between the everyday curator and the contemporary institutional curator, just because, to repeat, A, the contemporary curator has always been an amateur, and B, I think they're working from very similar motivations. Now, obviously, if you do something for a profession, you're going to have a more, you know, sort of specialized iteration of that task.
Yeah, and Marcus Sivin, this notion of connoisseurship, which David talks about in his book, I mean, how does one develop the authority, the imprimatur of expertise that says, you know, I can curate this exhibition because I'm smarter than everybody else. I know more about art.
That's a tough one. Right. And even, you know, I was just with my students this morning, and it's so much about taste, right? The students I work with are incredibly earnest. They want to curate out of a desire to communicate their ideas of what the world is and what the world could be. Many of them even want to do some good. And so, how do you get that away from just like, this is what Margaret likes, or this is what Marcus likes, or this is what Tom likes, and how do you have that story of the exhibit or the story that the artist is trying to tell? How do you support that in a way that communicates to other people?
And David, with so much art out there and so many things to choose from and so many directions that artists are going in, isn't it helpful to have somebody who says, okay, here's a show or here's a group of objects and artworks, maybe they're installations, maybe they're performance pieces, whatever. whatever, but they are thematically related and they are better appreciated when they are in juxtaposition to other things as opposed to juxtaposition to any old thing, you know. So they've chosen mm-hmm. carefully what to juxtapose. It seems that curating is the art of juxtaposition. It's mm-hmm. We need these people, right? I mean, this is a relatively new field, you know, 20 or so years old in terms of what we're considering contemporary curation. But aren't they necessary?
The curator herself is sort of engaged in this dance between, am I independent or am I dependent? And, you know, right from the beginning, the curators were working with very powerful, wealthy collectors, and they were sort of in service to what those people were collecting. So right away, you have a curated selection from which the curator chooses. And this is also the case in institutions, for instance. I think it gets a little tricky when we're looking at the international biennials that have emerged over the past 15 or 20 years, for instance, and the curator is essentially authoring these biennials. It's important to note, or just to be aware, that as much as a curator can help us see things that we might not see and bring work that needs to be seen into the light of day, the curator can also give us a mistaken impression of what's out there. There's a power play. There are power structures involved in contemporary curation, just as there would be when there are runway shows, there are fashion weeks, and certain designers sort of trot out various trends. And what I think is particularly troublesome in contemporary curation is what I call in the book this tendency to remystify by demystifying. So this tendency to present exhibitions that are full of dissent, that are full of a radical politics. And there is a degree of institutionalization behind those large-scale exhibitions that claim radicalism that I think is kind of problematic and worthy of some investigation on behalf of the viewer. Because, of course, what can end up happening is that these, you know, these artists and these ideas can be sort of programmed into the existing framework as an attempt to give us a false sense that certain people have been included, certain ideas have been included, and furthermore, that certain sort of political and cultural tasks are being done when they're not actually being done.
Sure. Well, of course, radical chic, you know, a term that's been in the landscape for 20 years now, maybe more.
Yeah.
Marcus, it's interesting that the program in curatorial practice at MICA is an MFA program. It's a Master in Fine Arts. Is the art, quote unquote, of curating, you know, on par with the people who are creating paintings and sculptures? And
I think that that designation of MFA there, what it means to me anyway, in my teaching is that curating is a hands-on practice, and often it involves a heck of a lot of teamwork. I think what part of what David's talking about and that he talks about in the book is this, it's almost a cult of the curator. So the figure of the curator has recently become so elevated that there's almost, as David describes it, like a curator porn that develops. What we're doing in curatorial practice at MICA is team-based. It's often community-oriented, and often the students are making decisions about everything from concept down to what the labels look like, placement of artwork. And so it's the curator becomes not just like a speak and point kind of position, but the curator is somebody who's in there rolling up their sleeves.
Yeah, well, David, you're going to get the chance, as I understand it, to roll up your sleeves with some of Marcus's students early mm-hmm. next week after your thing at Red Emma. So that'll be a fun conversation, yeah. I'm sure. Well, thank you both, gentlemen. I appreciate your taking the time this morning. This is interesting stuff. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Balzer is associate editor at Canadian Art Magazine and the author of Curationism. He's joined us on the line from Toronto. Marcus Sivin has been in the studio with me today. He's the acting director of curatorial practice at MICA. David Balzer will be speaking about his new book Sunday night at 7:30 at Red Emma's. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up on Maryland Morning, remembering Lincoln's second inaugural. Sheila will curate that very conversation right after the news. But first, it's time for the Environment in Focus with Tom Pelton.